With the launch of ChatGPT, Sam Altman and OpenAI reinvigorated our imaginations and fears of a world with artificial intelligence. While the company looked like a stunning success from the outside, a battle was brewing within on what the future of AI should be. Almost a year after launching ChatGPT, that battle erupted into a war when the company fired its charismatic CEO, Sam Altman. From Wondery, Business Wars is a podcast about the biggest corporate rivalries of all time. And in the newest season, host David Brown digs into the philosophical differences within OpenAI that culminated in Sam Altman's shocking firing, the chaos that followed, and what it means for the future and safety of AI in the modern world. Follow Business Wars on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. And for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts, with shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Wondery means business.
Wow. Wow.
Oh, my God.
Okay. This is going to be a very interesting little experiment. That's all I'm saying. That is all I am saying. So, first of all, hi, everybody. It's Friday. I'm Kai. And we've had a minor technical malfunction here. Hopefully we're live on YouTube. I don't even know. Frankly, that's the least of my problems. I'm on Zoom. Molly's on grown-up radio equipment. And so we're going to try this anywho. Right? Do I have that right? Because I'm not sure I'm in the communications loop. Yes?
That's my understanding. If I talk out loud, am I going to come out your speakers and then you can't talk over me? Because if so, I'm going to take extreme advantage.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I guess I could put, Oh, you know what I could do? I could put my headphones on.
You got some
know.
Cans?
Anyway, all right. Well, so
I don't hear myself coming out, so I think it's going to be fine. Basically, though, this is an exciting news. Not exciting at all. The connection that Kai, that whole, all the thing where I sit and I babysit the show every day in case there's the internet goes down, didn't happen during the show, but apparently it just happened now. So Monday could be exciting. You know what? Yeah. Let's not borrow trouble from Monday because we got enough trouble today. Hello, everyone.
We got lots of trouble.
Thanks for joining us.
Hi. It's Friday.
Yeah.
And we're just doing our thing. So I got news. You got news?
We got news. Yeah. We're just, and hopefully you can see us on YouTube, because if there was ever a day to just like hang out and take a breath, it was today. Okay. Enough breathing. Go to the news.
Okay. You want to go first?
I don't even know where to start, man. Okay. No, I want you to go first, because this is like my question of the day.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. I need to know.
We got the unemployment report for May this morning. Stunning surprise to the upside. Not only did we not lose 10 million jobs, we added 2.5 million jobs back to this economy, which nobody was expecting. And the unemployment rate, instead of going to 20, went from 14.7 to 13 point whatever it is. Okay. So that's what happened. Yep. And everybody early this morning is scratching their heads going, holy crap, what? I don't understand what's going on here. And then Paul Krugman, Nobel laureate, noted person of economic influence, and it has to be said, a liberal in a very conservative political period, if you're the government in the United States, tweeted out this. He said, sorry, I'm just pulling it up here because I'm kind of jury-rigging this. He said, This being the Trump era, you can't completely discount the possibility they've gotten to the BLS, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, right? And that made all economists and economic journalists on Twitter go, whoa, Paul. First of all, that's bull funky, because BLS data is globally respected. Okay. Number two, when you do something like that, you put yourself in the same category as Donald Trump, who 4 years ago was saying things like, Janet Yellen is keeping the interest rates low to get Barack Obama reelected. And oh, by the way, the unemployment rate is not 7% or whatever the heck it was back then. It's 40%. The jobs numbers are fake. So everybody on Twitter and in the general econosphere went, Paul, you screwed it up. Krugman did back off that. Okay. And he came back and he apologized and he said, look, they are truly well-trained professionals and I respect their data. But it got everybody talking about what is a legit glitch in these numbers, which is this. When they do the job survey, which, by the way, is done by the Census Bureau, not the Department of Labor, but that's a whole different thing. They don't just call you and say, hey, are you unemployed? And you say yes or no, and they mark that down on the sheet. What they do is they ask you a bunch of questions about the characterization of if you're out of work, why? Have you taken an unpaid week for some reason? Did your boss say, hey, you're furloughed? Because those get counted in two different ways. One gets counted as layoff, one gets counted as temporarily furloughed, right? And those are different things. You're either counted as unemployed or you're not. And what has been happening the last 3 months now, right? March, April, and May, is that the people who are doing the questioning on behalf of the Department of Labor are not coding those answers in a uniform way. So the data is a little funky. People who are being, who have been temporarily laid off are being counted as unemployed. People who are actually unemployed are counted as just absent from work. And so the numbers are a little bit messy. The upshot of this today is that there is a technical note in the Department of Labor's report that says, look, I'm paraphrasing, these numbers are wonky. We're going to check it out and try to make it uniform. Now, it's been 3 months. You'd think they'd figure it out. And one might also say, look, why don't they just adjust this data as a one-off? And they are really, really reluctant to do that, in part for reasons that Paul Krugman and Donald Trump have brought to light, which is if you do it as a one-off, people will say, oh, they're just screwing with the numbers, man. You can't rely on these numbers. So they right. just want to keep it as uniform as they possibly can while acknowledging the mistake. So turns out, had they counted people appropriately, the unemployment rate would have been not 13% and change. It would have been like 16% and change. So there is actual impact here, but personally, I'm willing to cut these folks a little bit of slack when they're dealing with numbers like 2.5 million, 10 million jobs changing hands. It's I can't imagine being in the Bureau of Labor Statistics right now. That is my gut on what's going on.
So if it had been reported at closer to 16%, would it have been less WTF, for lack of a better way to put that?
Well, yeah, because the unemployment rate would have gone up, right? Everybody was expecting would the rate to go from 14.7 to almost 20. And had it gone to 16, everybody would have been like, that's a little curious, but that's vaguely in line with expectations. It going the other way was like a, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and you can on some level understand, it's funny because my new producer on the tech show, Michael Lipkin, was explaining a little bit to me about how BLS numbers are calculated and how many things you would have to mess with to get numbers to come out the way you wanted them to. And the fact that in order to preserve the like pristine nature of the report, they never go back and like tweak after the fact, even if, you know, that doesn't seem to add up. It is also the job of journalists to be like, wait, what?
Totally.
When a number doesn't seem right, right? That is literally what they tell you in journalism school is like, if a number doesn't seem right, you go, wait, what? But more importantly, it's the state of trust, I think, that was so disturbing about this. The fact that people were in a position to be like, I'm not sure if I can believe these numbers. That seems bad.
Yeah. So look, there's sampling error. Right. Which is what today is. Mm-hmm. And then there's manipulation of the numbers, which is not what today is. No matter what Paul Krugman says, it's not what it was four years ago, no matter what Donald Trump says. I would also say, just like peek behind the curtain here. Right. Because you were listening as Heather and I were talking about this before the show. Yeah. We had Heather Long from The Washington Post on Marketplace this afternoon. And at, you know, the show goes on the air at 2 LA time, and at like 1:58:30, I said, hey, Heather, if I ask you to explain this jobs thing in 30 seconds. Ooh, look, you're drinking Coke with sugar in it.
I'm having a Mexico because I'm exhausted.
Right. If I ask you to explain this in 30 seconds, could you do it? And she kind of went, and we had a really tight 5 minutes for the wrap today, which is why I didn't go into it, because as you heard me say it, it probably took 2.5 minutes. But yes, question the data always. But have confidence in US government economic data as opposed to like the Chinese, you know.
Yep.
That's my shit.
Yeah. You have to have confidence in something, by God. Yeah. Apparently that thing is not the New York Times or Facebook. No.
Oh my goodness, right? How big a mess is that?
That was a segue into extreme harshness, but it's been so interesting over the last week or so to look at what are suddenly big similarities in the sound of executives within the within Facebook and the New York Times. I am just going to say, because I'm really tired and feeling a little snarky, it is so on brand for the New York Times to take like a pandemic and a possibly 400-year-old overdue racial uprising and somehow make it all about the New York Times.
Unbelievable.
That's really, that's really on the nose for them. So the, in case you missed these, so Facebook, what's happening at Facebook is that many, many, many employees are objecting publicly and privately to Facebook's policies, specifically Mark Zuckerberg's decision to, in this case, not do anything about either flag or remove President Trump's post about when the looting starts, the shooting starts. And frankly, just his kind of reaction to the whole thing. It sounds like internally, people, you know, the Washington Post had a big story today saying that Facebook employees feel like they are caught in an abusive relationship with President Trump, like that Facebook has been so careful to essentially appease President Trump, right? There's been, there have been so many accusations of conservative bias against social media, and let's be real, Facebook doesn't want to be regulated. Yep. And so it is a company that absolutely is trying to stay out of it. And by staying out of it, they've just waded right in, and employees are furious now. And then simultaneously, the New York Times publishes this op-ed by the one person I've ever reported on Twitter, Senator Tom Cotton, calling, I mean, how weird is that? Senator Tom Cotton sending, you know, calling for troops to be sent in against American protesters. And that led a whole bunch of New York Times employees to basically tweet the same thing, which is running this puts Black New York Times staff in danger. And people were furious about it. People were furious about it all over Twitter. There have been all of these meetings. And the Times spent, you know, a couple of days saying things like, honestly, if you built a generator and you put like Mark Zuckerberg statements about newsworthiness and not being the arbiter of truth up against the New York Times statements about how important it is to like address all sides and every version of a conversation has to be addressed and whatever, you could probably have, you could probably play like a real fun little Mark Zuckerberg or James Bennett, the New York Times op-ed page editor game, BuzzFeed, I'm talking to you. And then today, the Times essentially came out and said, well, okay, actually, we just really... After defending it as the highest purpose of journalism, then came out and said, like, turns out it was really rushed and James Bennett wasn't available for comment. And this 25-year-old was in charge of like rushing it through and they didn't fact check it. Which of all of the arguments I thought would come out of this was not the one that I had on my bingo card. The we weren't really paying attention when we let a sitting senator apparently by some readings call for violence against American citizens using the U.S. military. But I think it, what is so interesting is the state of everything. Like I had a friend come to me and just be like, yeah, I got to admit, I'm kind of surprised that this turned into such a big thing at the Times. And I was like, really? Much like Facebook, like, really? Like, are you paying attention at all to what it is like to be Black in America right now and all of the confluence of things that are coming together at this exact moment that have made this the last straw? The last straw on so many levels.
Exactly.
It's fascinating to me that one side is saying we are an editorial platform making very conscious editorial decisions. The other side is saying we are not any of that. We are a neutral platform where information appears. And yet... the leaders of both organizations spent a lot of this week saying a lot of the same things.
And somehow they always make it about themselves.
And somehow they always make it about themselves, exactly. And to borrow a phrase from my friend Kai Rizdahl, and I just thought that was interesting.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh man. Love you too, Bollywood. I love you.
I love that. Oh, I'm like, God, why don't I use that more often? That is useful.
it is a nice little
time will tell, right? It is. Yeah. It's like, I don't know how to get out of this exactly, but.
Oh my God. Okay. So shall we move on to something lighter to end things on this Friday?
Let's.
Oh man. I'll tell you, this show sounds all kinds of weird coming out of my computer speakers. Okay. I love mine. It's amazing. So
yeah.
It was Monday, right? Where the President of the United States and the Attorney General of the United States moved peaceful protesters forcefully out of Lafayette Square using tear gas and armed police. There's been a back and forth between the mayor, Muriel Bowser of Washington, D.C., and the President of the United States over troops and all kinds of things. It's just a bad scene. So, and look, let's also parenthetically, Washington, D.C. does not have a lot of political power, right? Just because of the way it was set up 240 whatever years ago was. But apparently they own some of the streets, because today Mayor Bowser authorized in 35-foot high letters on 16th Street, right leading up to Lafayette Park, Lafayette Square and the White House. I love this so much. In traffic yellow, Black Lives Matter, 35 feet tall. Look it up. It's on the web. I'm sure we'll have it on our show page. Latest episode is what Tony tells us to go to. Black Lives Matter and the Washington, D.C. flag. I loved it so much. I think it was it was gutsy and it made a statement. I loved it. I loved it.
Yep. It's incredible. It's like three blocks long. It is phenomenal.
Yep. That's what I got. That was mine.
I mean, honestly, I think that given the week that we have seen, that seems like the best possible way to end the show on three damn blocks of Black Lives Matter.
Yep. Good. There we go.
All right.
There we go. So
that's it.
Links for all this stuff, I think in the YouTube comments, Tony said, also on our show notes, makemesmart.org, and click on the episode you're looking for. Also, email your questions to us in advance of next Wednesday, or comments, whatever you want. MakeMeSmartAtMarketplace.org. And look, just take care of yourselves out there, will you?
Please do. Please do. Take care of yourselves. Take care of your friends. Take care of your people. Wear your masks. I beg you.
Wash your hands.
Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Sam Anderson. Our digital producer is Tony Wagner. Our senior producer is Jody Becker. Ben Hathcote is our video producer. Our video intern is Ethan Peretz. Erica Phillips writes our newsletter and our smart speaker skill.
I feel like I was yelling all day. Was I yelling? Was I yelling just now? Was I loud?
In the Zoom. No, it's just Zoom audio.
All right. Okay. All right.
You sound weird to yourself, is all.
Charlton Thorpe is pushing the buttons today. Our theme music was composed by Ben Talladay and Daniel Ramirez. The executive director of On Demand is Sitar Nieves. The senior vice president and general manager is Deborah Clark. Holy cow. We got through it. Wasn't sure that one.
We did. And listen, everybody on this list had the exact same kind of tough week. Hugs to everybody. Hugs to you, the team.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.